It's another edition of the Fallscast, brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, live from the Jenks building. For the first time ever, we're all together and we're doing this live. So we're really happy that you guys came, and we have obviously a pretty special guest coming later, and we're gonna proceed with a little panel discussion just about the Fallscast and all the stuff that we've been doing for a year now. I like this idea because it's an opportunity for us as a group to reflect on what has obviously been an insane year. But the insanity of the last year is really what prompted us to start the Fallscast. So I think it, you know, in some ways, and I think we all have gone through this, right? We've been able to kind of reflect on COVID and everything that's happened and find a lot of the positives. And I think for us, at least, that's been having, you know, the opportunity to start this podcast. And now we've made 49 episodes. And at this moment, we're making our 50th, which is amazing.
Big 50. Woo!
We're old.
And I mean, technically, we might have made one or two more than that. But
shush, be quiet, Bart. Be quiet, Bart.
Well, this is the official 50th now. So I want to introduce you guys to the panel, because you've probably never seen them in person, some of you anyway. But to my left is the beautiful and talented Suzanne Searle.
Hello.
To her left is the less beautiful and still talented-ish.
Sexy. And I still hate you, Alex.
It's Mike Searle. I know we have our neighborly friend, Jennifer Mulay.
Howdy doodly do.
And as always, the amazing, the fantastic, the incomparable, Mr. Bart Sullivan.
Hello.
So thanks again for joining us. And like I said, really the purpose of the panel is just for us to kind of talk about how the podcast got going and reflect on some of our favorite like moments in the podcast. So, you know, obviously we started this because of the pandemic. I think at some point had done some podcasts before the pandemic, way, way back, maybe 2 years ago. We did an interview with Anthony Gomez, a school board member. That was our very first interview podcast. There was no panel discussion or anything like that. It was just, you know, a discussion with Anthony. And I think, Bart, you might have been there for that. Were you there with
me?
Not
that one. I believe we did one about a year later that I was with you.
It took us, so 3 years ago, yeah, we did a podcast. And then a year later, we did a second podcast. And that was with Brenda Cameron Ryan from Keys to Serenity, who's fantastic. We were lucky to have her. She does so much great stuff for the community. And we've actually had her on a second time since forming this thing as Fallscast. So we're lucky to have people like that. And then the very last one we did before this became the Fallscast was during the pandemic. We actually had Abby Paskey from the Downtown Cuyahoga Falls Partnership come on and talk to us again before we really started doing the panel, before it was called the Fallscast. And all of those are still on our YouTube channel. So if you want to check those out, you certainly can. I was going to ask you guys, what was your immediate reaction when I suggested us doing a podcast?
Are you nuts? What's a podcast?
What's a podcast?
What's a podcast?
To be quite honest, I still say that every week.
Are we nuts and what's a podcast?
Yes.
And what the hell are we doing up here?
I would say I don't have to dress for it, so let's do it.
No pants.
If we don't wear pants, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think Mike wears pants, but, you know, the rest of us, as far as I know.
Yeah, being nice. Being good.
Mike is, honestly, internally right now, Michael is having quite the war with himself just to behave, which.
Strange. I don't like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
If you only knew how much I have had to edit from the most recent episodes.
I'm sorry, Bart.
Oh, sorry, Bart.
Sorry, Bart. Sorry, Bart. If you listen to the show, you know that's a usual reaction, usually to Mike, although it happens with the rest of us, too.
I think another reason we agreed to do the podcast is because we missed each other a whole lot. We spent a lot of time together having barbecues.
Alex.
Oh.
I hate Alex.
Oh. But we
can take
miss
it.
Each
it's
other,
okay.
And
I can
it was
take
a way
it.
To hang out and be safe during the pandemic and spend time together and
and
make fun of Alex, yes, and yeah, and listen to your awesome beats.
Stop.
Steven?
That's a, that's part of the Bart's Arts theme song right there. I had only made the podcasts that we made. Like, I had never made a podcast before, so I didn't know what I was doing either, and it was just kind of like, but like you said, we missed each other, and I think that's one of the things. When we started the False Free Press, you know, we had a print issue. We did, like, I think 2 print issues before we were like, yeah, this is not working, so, you know, we're just going to go straight online. And that worked out for us pretty well for a while. We published a lot of articles and stuff. And I think at first we had delusions of grandeur to a certain extent. You know, oh, we're going to sell ads. We're going to make this a business. Someday we're going to have an office. You know, this is going to be. And I mean, maybe that could have happened, but I don't think we had the drive to make that happen, frankly. So we continue to write articles. And, you know, well, I should say Bart continues to write articles.
Hey, Mike has one right now that I need to post.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep threatening to write one, but it hasn't happened so far. through it all, we really became friends. You know, us and Steven and other people, except Mike. I mean, I think that you're right. It definitely helped us, like, hang out together. And even during the pandemic, we did what we called driveway drinking, and I'm sure a lot of you guys did that, just putting lawn chairs on a driveway and staying socially distant. Nobody did. No? No, you didn't do that. I still do that.
We still do that.
We still do it.
Yep. So.
We just sit closer now.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to take this from me when you're making your comments. So, you know, our show is always a panel discussion, and we talk about the week's news, and then we transition into an interview. And we've been so lucky to have really just a lot of amazing interviewees. Jennifer actually has the distinction of having been the very first interviewee on the show. tell us what was going through your head when you were doing that interview with us.
Was that the expertise on COVID-19 interview?
Yes.
Oh man, I was totally didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I'm like, I was still in the what's a podcast and oh hey Alex, how are you? But you know, he's a really great interviewer, and it was cool and fun. It was laid back. It wasn't like getting a microphone in your face and asking questions. It was just having a conversation. And I happen to know a lot about the pandemic and COVID precautions and stuff because I work at a area hospital, and we were just getting blasted. So I was doing a lot of reading, and the hospital system was doing an awesome job of being transparent and providing as much information as they could. So I felt like I could really provide valuable information during a very scary time. So I wasn't really uncomfortable or nervous at all. It was just like, oh, hey, what's going on? So it was very cool. And I had no idea I was the first.
Well, and we were going to do, it was just going to be kind of a sample episode. Remember, we weren't going to release it. We were like, well, let's just see how it goes.
And we had 3 recorded all at once.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hey, I can't be a representative and let my employer know that I was talking about this or be responding on behalf of. So,
yeah, so I had to edit out a couple of bits.
Yeah, we had to do some editing.
Yeah. Well, we always have to do some editing, as Bart knows all too well, because I say,
Sorry, Bart.
What? No, particularly Alex's interview a couple weeks ago, in which every other word was
Because I don't prepare. Really I don't prepare. I just, it's coming right off the top of my head.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
Well, you're welcome, Bart. It's good practice.
Okay. I'm not editing.
I was going to talk about some of the amazing interviewees we have had, and I guess, you know, I'll just do a highlight here. I mean, Amy Phillips, our resident bird nerd, she's been on twice. I'm sure she'll continue to come on because there's actually been bird news. There's like a crazy disease killing birds. I don't know if you guys know this. You're supposed to put your bird feeders away because birds are dying, and we don't want that disease to spread to other birds. So that's bad news. But maybe we can have her come on. Maybe she's got more information on that.
I have plans for her and a couple other people. All at once, we were starting a podcast. So
that sounds sinister.
As soon as they get that podcast started, they'll be on the show.
Okay,
and I'll
cool.
ask Amy about that while she's on it.
Okay.
Well, I want to know what's happening to the birds and what's going on. So yeah. Make it happen.
I think that's a great idea. You know, we had Jeanette Loretich. She started, along with some other people, a sort of alternative Talk of the Town Facebook page, and then we had her on later as a guest panelist. Sunny Matthews, who was here earlier, we had her on the show right after the George Floyd vigil, which was so powerful, her speech. We live broadcasted that on our Facebook page, and then I had her come on afterward and talk about the speech and talk about, you know, George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and all that stuff. So, I mean, that was just a really great interview. And actually, our interview was so long that I ended up putting that one on our YouTube page in its entirety. Because usually our podcast is like an hour 30, hour 45. And if I had, you know, I think at the talk I had with Sunny was like 2 hours long, just that. So we ended up putting that on our YouTube page. We had Kay Phelps from Upfront Art Space. We had Drew Riley at the exact time that he left his Ward 1 seat installing our esteemed guest, Rachel Loza, over here, the Ward 1 councilwoman. And
That was one of my favorite interviews, yeah. It was very entertaining. Yeah, and he just was very knowledgeable, and I really enjoyed it.
Drew's one of those people who you feel like you're his best friend when you're in his presence, because he treats everybody that way. So, and then now we make a lot of fun of him because he moved to Stowe.
Yeah, Stowe Billy.
We had NJ Akbar, who was talking about some of the DEI initiatives, the diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives that were happening on school boards and stuff. He's a school board in Akron Public Schools, so, and he's a professor at Kent State. We had Andrew Lewis, who, he is a black metal strength training. He does he is a strength coach there. So that was great to have him on. He actually invited me to come down and do a workout too, which was great because I need it.
Don't we all?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll speak for myself. We had Councilman Jerry James on from Ward 7. Mike and Suzanne interviewed him.
It's all you. I'm just here for color.
You're just here for prettiness?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
It was a good interview. We got to know a lot about his history because he's been on the council for
almost 20 years.
20 years, which is crazy. So there's a lot of history behind there, and it was really great just to talk to him and get his experience and some history behind the council and the city. So
yeah, and he's just a good guy.
Yeah, he's just easy to talk to, and yep.
Yes, I agree with all those things. Rachel Loza was also a guest on the podcast at one time. So that's two mentions for you. You're welcome.
Going for four.
Kathleen Balog. Now, this was my favorite one. Kathleen Balog is a zookeeper at the Akron Zoo. She is the one who's in charge of caring for the blue lobster that was captured, mistakenly delivered to Red Lobster and somebody there. So Red Lobster has an award for their employees. It's a Blue Lobster Award. So like their employees of distinction get this Blue Lobster Award. And somebody at the Cuyahoga Falls store had gotten that award. So when she saw an actual blue lobster come in their lobster shipment, she was like, this is not right. And they ended up contacting. What's that?
We shouldn't eat it.
Right. Yeah, maybe eat we shouldn't eat that one.
Eat it with some butter.
Delicious.
Don't eat it.
Delicious. Stop.
Well, so they contacted corporate. Corporate contacted some nonprofit organization that saves wildlife, and specifically like ocean wildlife. And now that blue lobster is at the Akron Zoo right by the food court, which I think is maybe a bad spot for it.
Kind of funny, but...
He's not so blue anymore, right?
A little less blue. That's right. Claudette or Claudia. It's Claudia.
Claudia.
Yeah, I still think I like Claudette better. I don't know why, but so that was great, and we were really lucky to have her come on. Matt Weiss from Collide Cuyahoga Falls. We were lucky to have him. Collide Cuyahoga Falls, fantastic organization, and Matt just an awesome guy. I've been an interviewee on the
phone. Three times.
Too many times. Too many.
What a podcast hog.
It is the cure for, you know, not being able to sleep.
You're in a band.
It really is. Yeah, I just played right there.
Did you play?
It was me right there. We had Cindy Michael from Harp and Thistle. We had Tim Frankish from The Works. We had Barrett Moy from Underhills. We had James Lloyd Davis, Get Well Soon. We had Diana Colavecchio twice, which was fantastic. It was great to hear about all the stuff that's coming up and then also get clarification about what's going on State Road as that became somewhat controversial. Ruben Ryan from Point of No Return Improv Troupe. I mean, Connie Hightower and Matt Shaughnessy, when they were running for domestic relations judge and the State House, respectively, John Fitzgerald from New Mix Studios, Lindsay Hill from Gene and Lou, Eric Frank and Renee Kintz from Divine Food FSW.
Food, Spirits, and Wine.
Food, Spirits, and Wine, that's it. Kim White from Flurries, which was a great interview. That was a lot of fun. You want to talk about that one, Bart? Because there's a lot in there that I didn't even know until I heard that.
Yeah, well, Flurries is one of those restaurants that's been a sort of a staple around here for a while anyway, and I'd wanted to talk to her for a while, and it worked out. And I actually got to learn a lot about Colgan Falls history in general just from that interview.
Yeah, I didn't know that it had been over there on Sackett Avenue where Oh So Sweet was and where Needed is now, yeah. And then moved to Front Street.
Well, that's the first time I had been there was when they were on Sackett, and where you almost sat in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were like three tables, so it was a really cool little spot.
Food. Great food, though.
Yeah.
Hello. I'm like, where'd this come from? Hello. Get out of my face.
What do you think?
I think nothing.
Par for the course, buddy. We also had Brittany and Dre Wiley from Magna Wine Boutique, which is great. We had Anthony Gomez on the actual Falls Cast, which Suzanne did that interview. We had Marvin Montgomery from Kicks and Cuts, who I actually went and got my hair cut there and then did the interview so that I could like really immerse myself. I needed a haircut is what it was. Kimberly Stimmel from Closet of Caring, an amazing organization that does so much for Cuyahoga Falls and Akron.
That was one of my second favorite, too. Not just because I did the interview, but just...
The fact she got it up and running in like 4 months.
We had Sarah Showman and Mark Dowidziak.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun one, too, because they recognized my name when I contacted them, but just weren't entirely sure. And then as soon as the Zoom window pops up, it's Bart!
Uh-huh.
Because they knew me from the library, from doing so many shows there,
that's cool.
It's like, oh, yeah, we know you. And so, like, we were just chatting. We chatted for, like, another half hour after the end of the interview, just talking about old days at the library.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were from the Largely Literary Theater Company. That was a fun interview to listen to, for sure. We had Mike and Mika Pena, who came on to talk about the history of Bab Run, which was kind of amazing. And I finally did find the planters that were made out of the old farm equipment. It's on the Broad Boulevard side of the library, those weird old...
That's the one we're at, yeah.
Yeah.
So, we were wondering what that was, and we were wondering if that's what you were talking about. Yeah.
I had thought it was like near the pergola that's kind of in the front of the library, and I was like, it can't be that. We also had Russ Balthus, who was talking to us about the Merriman Valley Master Plan, which they're meeting about tonight. That's why the mayor isn't here yet. So, you know, we're excited to have him come in, but that's what they're doing right now. So that was great to have Russ on to talk about that. Councilman Russ Balthus, the former law director of the city. I mean, talk about an esteemed guest, right? Also just a nice guy, yeah. We had Katie Bear from the Mustel Store, which I didn't even know there was a such thing as a Mustel Store. Do you want to talk about
Mustel
that a little?
Mustel Store has been there for a while, too. It was sort of... You know, and I don't remember a heck of a lot about the interview, so, but it has been there for a while. It was part of the Metro Parks. It used to be a home for the Mustels who worked and lived there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was a former, you know, like, you buy dry goods and, you know, vegetables and stuff there back in the 1800s.
So I used to run there on the towpath.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Where is that located?
It's down in Colga Valley National Park, but I can't remember where.
It's right off.
15.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Audience participation. Love it.
Yay. Because we don't know what we're doing.
Because I haven't listened to like 80% of the interviews. I'm just here for the podcasting.
Oh, man. Quiet you. We also had Jennifer Schulman, who's a Cuyahoga Falls art teacher at the high school, and she's also the organizer of the Art Walk, which is just such a huge event and impressively, you know, pulled off every year. But this year especially, it was crazy what they had to do. They made these quilts, and they had QR codes, and you would scan it, and then you could see all the art and, like, interviews and little films and stories and things about how the art was. I mean, it was amazing. So we had her on the show, and that was awesome. We had Carlina Amato from the new paint and sip. It's called Clever Girl, I think.
Yes.
And it's above Grandpa's Candy Store?
Yeah, it is, because there's sweets above that.
Okay. Yeah, and I think Falls Music is yeah. above there, too. Yeah. Falls Music. Shout out to Falls Music. Not anymore. Oh. No, my my jazz piano lessons.
I didn't do it.
You break it.
You have to pay for that, AJ. Yeah, AJ Harris over here breaking stuff.
Tearing up the house.
Also a guest on the Fallscast, AJ Harris, in attendance. Sarah Klein, the superintendent of Cuyahoga Falls Parks and Recreation, another esteemed guest, talking about the master plan and all the great stuff that's happening at the parks, which, what a great city to live in is if you love parks, right? I mean, it's just amazing here. Shea Somerville from I Got Your Back Massage, which, I mean, who doesn't want a massage, right?
You didn't get one. That was disappointing. Maybe we need
a... Did you think you were going to get, like, a free one?
Yeah, I did.
Well, if you're listening, Shay.
I was the one that did the interview.
That's what Mike is for. That's what Mike is for. Come
no,
on.
No, ew, no.
Oh.
Ew.
Get the baby oil.
Really? Ew.
I love. And then we had Tom Sullivan. Tom is here in attendance, complete with his derby hat. Was a special Father's Day episode, which I have to admit, I don't think you ever said Happy Father's Day. I think you should take this opportunity to say Happy Father's Day, because you didn't even say it in any interview, man.
My computer died 5 minutes before the end of that interview, so we had to rush in, plug the computer in, and start a new track to finish it off.
Right.
Yeah,
Tom, I want to say on behalf of the Fallscast, Happy Father's Day, belated.
Sorry, Bart.
Oh, it's okay. And then our most recent guest was Jerry Holland from the Cuyahoga Falls Historical Society. Man, what an incredible interview that was, for a couple of reasons. A, that organization has so many artifacts and things to look at to really learn about the history of Cuyahoga Falls. You know, Summit County became a county in 1840. But Cuyahoga Falls predates the Summit County. And at one point, it was basically going to be Cuyahoga Falls, Ravenna, or Akron for the seat of justice in Summit County. And that was a big, in the middle 1800s, that was a big sort of dramatic, controversial, you know, series of events where they were trying to figure out what the seat of justice was going to be. And so as a result of that, there's a lot of history embedded in Cuyahoga Falls. In some cases, literally, there's guys going around with metal detectors who are like picking up things out of the ground, old coins. She said she had like Cuyahoga Falls specific currency that belonged to John Brown or something. And there was Underground Railroad activity in Cuyahoga Falls. And that was the impetus for us talking to her was the Hansparkers Memorial, where we had formerly enslaved people who were recognized, and they raised money to put a marker out for them because they lived in Cuyahoga Falls after they were, you know, freed, which was just an unbelievable story, not to mention being able to interview her to talk about that. What did you guys think about that?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, all the history and the knowledge, it's great.
Yeah, so I didn't know about the currency and whatnot, and I mean, I knew a little bit about the Underground Railroad and whatnot and some of the trails, but yeah, there's a lot of it I had no clue about.
I haven't listened to that interview yet, but I did attend the Hansparkers Memorial Service, and the history was quite amazing, and also I didn't know there was currency in the fall, so I want a piece of that. I want to see it. Do they have some at the society?
So they have there's a whole case of the stuff that they've unearthed with the metal detectors, and then because of COVID, a lot of people were like cleaning out their attics and stuff, and so she talked about how they have just gotten boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff. And then also, they're totally funded by public contributions, so you know it's really important that we support them. So yeah, lots of amazing interviews. I want to talk about just a little bit, what have we learned after 50 episodes? I made two notes here. One, Mike has a potty mouth. That was the first one.
Yeah.
Number two, okay, we all have potty mouths.
Yeah.
Not me. I mean, I don't. I'm the only one who doesn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Really? I'm an angel.
Well, you know, Bart doesn't breathe either.
Bart does not.
We drive Bart to the bad stuff,
on
I think.
On the podcast, he doesn't.
Yes.
Once in a while, we've gotten a few choice words out of Bart.
Yeah,
we have. But.
Yeah, under extreme circumstances.
And I get very, very happy when I see it. Yes.
What I've learned is not to agree to any more podcasts.
Yes.
We can't do it
without
you, Bart.
This is the third show I've worked on, and no more.
Good choice.
Yeah. Ours is the favorite, though, right?
Well, yeah.
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 That's what I was going to tell you right now.
Right. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But what else have we learned after doing this for 50? I mean, anything. What you know?
Still hate you.
What's that?
I still hate you.
What'd you say?
We can talk. We can talk on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock or 10:30 or like, oh shit, we forgot to set the alarm and let's bump it to Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. I got to take my kids to the dance class. And we can always make it happen and pull it off and just,
we do.
It's just very grounding to touch base with all of our friends and then dive right into what we did and what's going on around the falls.
Yeah.
Some mornings we get to go, oh shit, podcast in 5 minutes. Yeah. I got to put clothes on.
Yeah.
No, you don't, Dave.
We appreciate that. We do appreciate it.
It has been interesting, too, just this, the background of, you know, how to put a podcast together, uploading it to all the different sites that need to go to for people to hear it.
Which Bart does.
Which is literally all I do on Sundays. And then, you know, hopefully at some point, seeing people leave reviews other than the one review that we have on there.
Which isn't a very nice review,
No, it's not.
It's constructive, we'll say.
Very first, I think, couple episodes where we were a little dry. I think we have learned to be a little bit more looser and have more fun in it. You have to come up here and talk, Stephen. That's true.
Well, it depends on your definition of fun.
And I do still have that file on my computer.
Bart has it all.
He's got the
I have the blackmail material.
Yes, he's like, if he's short on rent, we're getting hit up. Yep.
Well, you know, I think something we've learned is just how much we really love Cuyahoga Falls.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, this city is just incredible. Front Street is developing incredibly, and no, you know, thanks especially to our esteemed guest, the mayor, who has arrived and is watching as we record this. But, you know, we do all these goofy film and TV references. We make fun of each other. Mike hates me. You know, it's and we really have so much fun. But I think the common denominator is that we love Cuyahoga Falls. We really do.
Yeah. I think that is something that has developed for me. Because I think I talked about before that I moved here because of this guy over here.
Sorry.
And I kind of, it became my home now. I wouldn't ever want to leave. I mean, it's just everything that it has to offer. There was stuff that I didn't know, and it's been really great.
It's library.
Well, and also, if you look at, 50 episodes, we've done maybe 47, 48 interviews. All but maybe one or two of those interviews were from people or businesses in Cuyahoga Falls.
Yes. Yep.
Only two of them were maybe from Akron.
Right.
You know, all of these businesses and all of these people who were in Cuyahoga Falls that no one knew about,
right,
and were bringing them into the spotlight, and suddenly, oh, wow, there's more. Like, we knew Cuyahoga Falls had a lot to offer, but we didn't realize
how much.
Yeah. And there's still a bunch and a lot to learn and more interviews to line up. Yeah. And
but I didn't think that there was that many to interview, that, you know, that much going on. And I'm just surprised every week that we can get another interview and another business that I wasn't aware of. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had the same experience. I'm not from here originally, and I moved here. And, you know, my kids were born after we moved here. And, you know, when you have kids in a place, you become attached to that community.
Yeah.
And I certainly become attached to this community in so many ways. So, well, thank you guys for doing this panel discussion. We have a pretty special interview to do, so we're going to take like 5 minutes and then get that going. But thank you very much, and thank you to everybody who's going to hear this, and also to all of you who are here for listening to us for the panel discussion. And we will talk with the mayor here in just a few minutes. All right? Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Since you miss your ginger hair and the way you like to dress. Well, why don't you come on over, stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over, Valerie? Oh, Valerie. Oh, Valerie. Oh, Valerie.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Fallscast, our first ever live Fallscast. It's our 50th episode extravaganza, and we're here with our esteemed guest, Mayor Don Walters. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thank you.
It's really our pleasure. Honestly, we've been wanting to have you on. We were pretty sure you'd say yes. I mean, there was a chance you'd say no. But we wanted to make sure that we did it at the right time. And I think it's a great time because obviously you're running for re-election, but also this is our 50th anniversary, our 50th episode, so it's just a good opportunity for us to really to bring you in because we talk about how much we love the city and all the great things that are happening in the city, and in a large part, you know, you're responsible for that. So thank you so much.
Well, I have a great team, so I have to thank them as well.
For sure. So look, I was going to make a joke about skunks. That was going to be my Mike's contention is that we use the skunks to fill the potholes. Which seems a little macabre to me. but actually, it's a good thing to maybe start with because there's news on that front this week. You guys have started a skunk abatement program whereby people can have a skunk removed and then they're reimbursed by the city. Is that the way it's going to work?
It is. And we put it in place. It's been over a month. We did not announce it. We just kind of secretly slipped it in there. And there were some people that we let know because they had inquired about that. But there is a reimbursement program. So if you call an exterminator, they charge to bring a trap. If they reach the target animal, which is a skunk, obviously, then there's a charge for that, and we'll reimburse part of it. The downfall, that sounds great. If you have a dog and you've let your dog out and it's got sprayed, it's not a pleasant thing. However, they have to be euthanized by law, and that's really why we did not promote it heavily. So we wanted to use it sparingly. And the people that were really needing it, we let them know. It is on our website. However, we have not promoted it very widely, but it is there if people need it.
Well, it's promoted now.
Yes, it is.
So we hear from you a lot. You're everywhere all the time. I sometimes describe you as Mr. Cuyahoga Falls. Stiff competition with Kenny King, obviously. But what we don't hear from you a lot, I think, is really your background. I mean, obviously, you were born and raised here, but I would love to sort of hear your story. One of the things that made me think about this is it's happened more than once, maybe a few times, where I've had somebody come to my house to, like, fix something who, when I mention, you know, being involved with the city and supporting the community and stuff, if your name comes up, they'll say, "Oh, Donnie." And I think it's just because, you know, you have been so ingrained in the community for so long, and these are maybe old classmates of yours. Will you tell us a little bit about, you know, where you were born, where you grew up, maybe what schools you went to and those kinds of things?
Sure. Well, I was born in 63. That makes me 57, soon to be 58. And I have lived here my whole life. So went to Lincoln School, Roberts, Falls High, graduated in 81. Our 40th reunion is this year. I'm on the committee. But during that time, I had a great childhood, wonderful parents, wonderful neighborhood. I lived in Madison over by Lincoln School growing up. So my story goes like this. My plan was to go to Hiram College. My brother went there. My parents paid for it. They were going to pay for me for private school. Pretty good deal. Ironically, I started working in a grocery store, my first job at 16 years old. That's what people do. They need some spending money. So I actually bought my first car, which I still have in my garage.
Still have, yeah.
All those years. But anyhow, the grocery store, I worked real hard. And my dad had a thing that he told me on my first day of work. He said, "Make sure they know your name." Now, what he meant was, don't be late every day so they know your name, but make sure that the store just opened. It was remodeled. It was A&P, and it was called Bisson's. So I worked my butt off. Well, they noticed that because within 3 years, the owner called me in his office, and he said, I want to make you one of the store managers. I'm going to give you keys to the store, and I think you can do it. Don't let me down. Well, I didn't let him down. So here I am, 19, making huge money. He paid very well, and I still get to see him. He's still in the area. However, I bought a house at 19 years old. I had cars. I had people all over. I mean, how many people have a house at 19? So I was a popular guy. So anyhow, I delayed college, and you know what happens when you put things off for too long? You don't do them. So unfortunately, after 10 years, the chain of grocery stores started to go under. The competition was fierce, the Giant Eagles, the Krogers of the time, Kriegers. So anyhow, I could see the writing on the wall. One of the other managers went to Roadway Express out in Copley at their big distribution center, and they paid the same money, free health care, and a huge pension, and you clock out and you go home. I wasn't used to that. I was staying late, really working hard, filling in for people. So I did. I went to a blue-collar job, and then the grocery store chain did go out of business. Now, here I am, blue-collar job. Was never my plan. What if I tear my shoulder up lifting things, or what do I do? What's my plan B? I had none. Well, ironically, the council person in my ward was not going to run. It was Tom Velo. He was my teacher at Roberts, and he was not going to run anymore, and I heard that. So I started early on to get my name out and start to get prepared to run for city council. Well, I won. I won in a big way.
How old are you at this time?
I was, we'll go back 20 years.
Okay.
So I was 37. So I run for city council. I won. I ran 5 more times. So I did 6 terms on city council. I ended up being city council president. I thought I was doing a pretty good job. And I was approached, and they said, you need to run for mayor. And my life was perfect. I had a good day job, city council. I remarried. My wife is an angel. And I didn't want to upset any of that, especially her.
You met her at Falls River Square, too, right?
I did. So I did. Our first date, I hate to say, was at Rockin' on the River. It was Friday night, July 10th, 2009, and we were married. We were married 1 year later. So when people say I don't understand the festivals and Rockin' on the River, I do. I understand it. So anyhow, here I am on city council. I was asked to run for mayor. I declined. And for the first time, the mayor's race was unopposed in Cuyahoga Falls that we're aware of, and Robart had no opponent. I didn't think I could win at the time, and like I said, my life was perfect. Well, 4 years later, I got a knock on the door, and they said, you need to run for mayor. So anyhow, I did my research. I thought, well, you have to raise a lot of money. You need a lot of helpers to pull this off. And I knew that he was entrenched. He had money. He had helpers. He was there a long time, 28 years, actually. And at the very last minute, I told him yes. I thought I could pull it off. And what tipped the scales were two things. One, people told me, forget it, you'll never win. And I'm very competitive. That was the wrong thing to say. And number two, my wife gave me her blessing. Because without that, the answer was no. So she said, you can't go to your grave wondering if you would have won. So we won by 368 votes.
Wow.
We raised,
slim margin,
raised over $250,000 for signs and flyers and billboards and all that, which was almost impossible for a no-name.
Wow.
So then, fast forward 4 years, my second election, which is really your testament, right? Sometimes the voters will give you a chance, and then they have to throw you out because you're not doing too well. So my second election, we won every precinct and every ward in the entire city.
Jeez.
So anyhow, it's been a dream come true for me. Honest, every day I wake up excited and I go to bed excited. I pull into this space that says mayor and I can't believe it's me. But I've never let anyone down. Every one of my jobs, I've worked my butt off and I continue with this because it's a passion. And my philosophy is you go 100 miles an hour until you can't go anymore at all. And you pass the baton. So I'm on the ballot. I'm running in November to do another term. But again, to me, this is all I do. It's my life. I'd take a bullet for this city because we're in competition with every other city. Stowe, Akron, Talmadge, they all do what we do. But we have to stand out. We have to be the best. So every day I strive to be the best city. And we're not perfect. You work on your flaws, right? But you promote the positive always. And we'll get to social media a little bit later in the podcast. But That's one of the things that just kills me sometimes, to see people that live in this town, they're a homeowner, they're invested in this town, and then they destroy it publicly. And I'm thinking, what? This is your city. Everybody I talk to, I try and instill in them that when the new fire truck drives by your house, that's yours. You own it. It's your street, it's your water lines, it's your parks. Absolutely everything is yours, and you have to look at it that way and have some pride in your city. You see a piece of trash, you pick it up and throw it away because that park is yours. So I really try and promote that with people, that take ownership, take some pride. If there's something wrong, let me know, but don't blast it on social media. Unfortunately, a lot of people like to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say good luck. But, well, thank you for that. I was going to ask, how often do you drive the Mustang to work?
I have a few times, actually. When the weather's real nice, I pull into that spot, and I'm thinking people are going to say, who parked in the mayor's spot? Well, it's actually me. But I do. I drive it whenever I can.
What can you tell us about it? Because I know it's you've got to be your pride and joy.
16 years old. I'm kind of a mechanic in my other life. So I've done everything but the bodywork and paint, because I don't do that. I rebuilt the engine. Part of my engine was built in this machine shop right where we're sitting.
Wow.
So I had the heads done because they needed redone. I put them on. I adjusted the valves wrong, and I blew the engine up as soon as I started it. So I had to start from scratch, which was good because I totally rebuilt a brand-new engine. Transmission, everything is brand-new in the car. It's like a brand-new 65.
Wow. That's amazing. I was going to ask you, actually, what do you think of this place? Because, you know, this one of the things that's happened during your time as mayor is that we've really seen arts blossom incredibly in this city. And now we have this Public Arts Commission. I think we have a member of the Public Arts Commission here with us, right? Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, to what do you attribute that?
It's all about quality of life, right? We love art. We love music. We love all those cultural things. And look around. This place has it. So this is a gem. And it seems like there's always more things being added. You don't know what it is from one day to the next. It's just amazing. So you'll see that we want to have that artsy feel all the way down. We have the art board. We're going to have money budgeted to do things. Believe it or not, Don Drum has offered to do a sculpture if we buy the materials. So you know, I hope he's still up for that. But so anyhow, that's really what transforms your city, because it's fun. You walk around down here. There's things to do. But the art is really what adds to the quality of life. Makes it really fun.
Yeah. So what do you know about, because you talk a lot about, you know, that I think this is the 16th largest city in Ohio. And we were talking just a little while ago, Summit County was formed in 1840. What do you think about the history of the falls? Because at one time there was controversy as to whether maybe Cuyahoga Falls would actually be the seat of justice. Do you know a lot about the history of Cuyahoga Falls?
Yeah, we were the county seat for a short time. And then it went to Akron. And I don't know how that battle went out. But we lost, and they were Akron. But actually, I would not want to be as big as Akron is. So we're 50,000. The census numbers are coming in soon. We're going to show growth. So we're the 15th largest city right now, probably even 14th once we get the numbers. But I have to say that's the perfect size. And here's why. So if you're a little tiny suburb, if you're a Monroe Falls or a Silver Lake, everyone knows each other, but they don't have any money to do anything. We've got the Natatorium golf course, 26 neighborhood parks. Just we can do all kinds of great things, but because we're big enough. Now, if you're bigger than Cuyahoga Falls, you have the money. But if we're Columbus, I will never see you again, ever. It's a million people.
Right.
We get the best of both worlds. We still know each other. We see each other at the grocery store. But we're big enough to have the tax base to do great things. Best of both worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually had an interview with Drew Riley before he left us for Stowe, where he actually said the exact same thing. He loved Cuyahoga Falls because it's like a big small city. It feels like a big city, but like you say, we run into people all the time. We run into you all the time. Okay, so here's another. This is kind of a funny one. I've asked you this a million times, so it's not going to be funny to you. But my daughter just finished going to Flights gymnastics for several, and she's gonna go to a different school now. But see, he already knows what I'm going to ask him. But we've talked about this, and I want to know how it went. Were you able to do the backflip? Because you wanted to do it your whole life, right?
I did. I have video to prove it. So one of the things on my bucket list was to learn how to do a standing backflip. Just stand and look at you and land on my feet. Well, ironically, our IT director's wife owns a gymnastics school. So I said, do you get private lessons? She said, yeah. So I would go after the little girls were done, and they would stick around and laugh at me. So I'd get loosened up, and I actually can do it. Now, with these clothes and these shoes, I might get hurt. But I do have video that I'll share that I can do a standing backflip. My wife said, absolutely don't do that. And so, well, she didn't know if I was going to the Nat to work out or going to gymnastics, and she would ask me, and I'd have to tell the truth. I can't lie. So I said, yeah, I'm going to gymnastics.
Good mayor, good husband, as it were. So what year did you first join council then?
2001.
Okay, and who were your predecessors? Because I know our community development director was at one time president of council, I think council at large, and Ward 5 council. But we have other people, like the Hummel family. Mrs. Hummel was actually on city council as well. Can you talk about some of the folks who mentored you?
Kathy Hummel is second to none. I mean, she was a tough lady, super smart, and I learned a lot from her. John Schmidt was on council at the time. I'll tell you, it was totally different back in the day. It was constant fighting. Now, you know, Robart, he had his ways, and a lot of the people didn't like him. So council would get very contentious, and there would get arguments and things like that. But in the end, Kathy Hummel, John Schmidt, just phenomenal. Tim Gorbach I love, too. He's pretty bipartisan. He can reach across the aisle. Good nature, just a super smart guy. Knows everything about finances, because that's what takes the longest to learn.
Yeah.
So these people were phenomenal in my upbringing on city council.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the opening of Front Street? That's obviously perhaps the hallmark of your time as mayor. It might be what you're remembered for in, you know, 100 years. He reopened Front Street. There was a councilman who was still alive, maybe is still alive now, when you reopened Front Street, who came and spoke, and he was the one council person apparently who did not want to close Front Street and make it a pedestrian walk. Can you talk a little bit about Front Street and what it means to you?
Yeah, that was Libert Bozzelli. He was on council way back when they closed the street, put in the pedestrian mall, which was a little over 40 years ago. So he did come when we opened it up. When I've lived here my whole life, so I kind of remember when it was a street. I was pretty young, but I do remember the whole pedestrian mall that never worked. Now, I'm not really going to blame them, because what happened was when they built Chapel Hill and Summit Mall and all that, the downtowns died. Everyone went to everything under one roof, and there was no one downtown. When all the shoppers leave, the businesses close. So they put in the pedestrian mall thinking that everyone's going to come back and walk around in this beautiful downtown, and then the businesses will come because now there's customers. Well, I don't know about you, but in February in northeastern Ohio, I'm not walking around in a pedestrian mall, nor anywhere else for that matter. So it never worked, but they had to try something. So over the years, it deteriorated really, really bad. So the fountain that used to be there, it leaked underground. It leaked into Jack Richards' place. It stunk. It was disgusting. So the bricks on the pedestrian mall were actually a brick veneer. They were probably a half inch, three-quarter inch, and they were porous. So in the winter, they'd absorb water, freeze, and explode. And we're trying to patch these little bricks, and they're all over the place. They're destroyed. So we're trying to fill it with gravel. Nothing worked. We got a quote that it was $1 million just to replace brick veneer on a failed pedestrian mall. So anyhow, I said, we're going to make this happen. But I have to have a unanimous vote on city council. And we were split. In fact, it was Republican controlled, I believe. It was. And I was not going to do anything. I want unanimous votes because I need to sell what I'm going to do to council, or maybe I didn't sell it good enough. So I knew we had to do it. We did all our research. We took a bus trip. We took city council, business owners, members of the public. We went to Valparaiso, Indiana. We went to South Bend. I got to hang out with Mayor Pete. And then we went to Oak Park, Illinois, and we set up with all the mayors while we were there to learn how did you do this process, because they converted from pedestrian mall to a complete street like we have. And I said, I see what you did right. Tell me what you did wrong, because I don't want to do that. So I learned a lot from them, but we involved everyone in that process, the people that had dogs, the families with strollers, the festival people. There's hidden places where you can dump gray water right in the street like a grease trap that you would never know is there, but you can dump your French fry grease and we can pump it out. There's electric hookups, water hookups that are all hidden because they were part of the planning process as well. So anyhow, we took all this time, numerous public meetings to get public input, And the final product is what you see now, and a lot of people played a part in that. So I think that's why they were so supportive, because they felt like it was theirs. It wasn't my way or the highway. That's not how I operate. But I'll tell you, before we took it to city council, there were some of my, I'll call them advisors, and they said, this is risky in your first term. If this thing doesn't work out, you're going to get thrown out of office. I said, I don't care. We have to do it. We have to do it now, because the malls are failing. People want to come back to the downtowns, but we have nothing here. So they told us it would be about 5 years for it to fill in, because it takes a while for businesses to relocate, fulfill their lease somewhere else. And it's been 3 years, and it's almost full. And most of the places are spoken for. So if you like it now, just hang on. It gets even better.
Applause. I was going to ask, could you talk a little bit about Fred Guerra? We just lost him to retirement, so congratulations. But he was so instrumental in a lot of what happened with Front Street. Can you talk a little bit about him?
He was, and he had always wanted to do something downtown, put the street back in, but I guess he was never allowed. And from what I understand, the previous administration had a different way of thinking about the downtown. Their goal was to have one person buy all the property, but to do that, it had to be really blighted and really dilapidated. So they did nothing. And the plan was, let it get so bad that Bob Stark is the one can come buy everything up, bulldoze it, and put in a Crocker Park Legacy Village, a fake downtown. Well, that's never gonna happen. And the other thing they didn't do is they didn't have a historic design and review board, which allows us to get state and federal tax credits. And without that, that theater would be empty. Who else would be empty? Rick Krotchka, that building would be empty. And a lot of them now have taken advantage of that, because but for that, it's not feasible to sink $2 million into an old building. So we did all those things. We didn't let it get blighted anymore. And it would have taken 20 years on a maybe to let it get so bad that one person could buy everything up because it was cheap.
Yeah, and speaking of that, there are many, many dollars coming in now. There's even more that's going to happen. Can you? Because I know that there's a gentleman maybe somewhere else in the country who's investing. Can you talk a little bit about what's coming?
Well, we're looking for more housing down on the southwest end here, because that old factory just has to go. So we're working through that. That should be happening soon. When I say soon, in a year. But everything will be finalized soon. Test actually said that they're going to do townhomes on the rear of their headquarters, which is right across from where Russ Balthus lives, if you know. So they're going to put more on that end. We have a chance to buy the Cromaldi that owns this car lot here. We have another spot for him at State Road. He's probably going to have two locations and then eventually close this. That'll get bought up. He also owns the car lot right on the other side, on the west side of Front. So we're already getting that appraised now. So when opportunities present themselves, you have to take it, because if it gets tied up, if that factory gets leased out to someone, it could be tied up for 5 years. And it just doesn't fit anymore down there.
Yeah, and then we have Summit DDs obviously doing pretty major construction. We have the Tiki Underground coming over here to the old Hunts building. But one of the things that actually was in the news just this week, because I think maybe it passed council just this week, is the boardwalk project. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the boardwalk has been in bad shape for a few years. So a little over a year ago, I pulled all my people and I said, here's where we need to focus. Number one was a boardwalk, because it's unacceptable, right? So we need to be moving forward on rebuilding, refurbishing, reimagining what it is. And number two, ironically, is South State Road. So we've been working on South State Road for over a year, and then all of a sudden it's become a hot topic that we've neglected them somehow. So anyhow, the boardwalk, the southern portion, which goes under Broad Boulevard, which I love because you don't have to fight the traffic, the top decking is okay, the railings are okay, but the parts between the decking and the bedrock is deteriorated. So our city engineer shut that part down, and that was my favorite part. Now you can't go on it. Other places are okay. We've rebuilt the top, but it's really time for a complete rebuild. So my idea was, if you haven't noticed, right behind the stage, there's a concrete walkway that starts at Broad, comes behind the stage, continues on in front of Burntwood as a sidewalk, and meanders all the way down to Oakwood. It's kind of an upper walkway, an upper boardwalk, which is already ADA accessible, but there's trees in the way. You can't see the river very well. So we have a design firm doing, they're going to probably have three options at least. what should it look like? Should it be all one contiguous walkway like it is now, rebuild the whole thing for about 1.5? Or should it be more segmented where you have river access, but you also have features up top? So we're not sure what it's going to look like, but we budgeted $1.5 million for next year. And then I don't know if you're going to ask about the federal money that we have too. That could go towards that as well.
Cool. And is that Brandsetter Carroll who's going to do that? Yes. Okay. And they're the same ones who did our parks improvement plan, right?
Right. So they're familiar with the city, and they're pretty good visionary too. I mentioned the federal money. Last year we got $5.5 million from the federal government to help bail us out. We were pretty proud that we didn't need it. We tightened our belt. We didn't backfill a lot of retirements and things. So we really operated lean during the COVID. But even better than that is our revenue wasn't down that much. The businesses didn't suffer. I mean, obviously, Gojo making Purell 24/7, that helped. But the hospital was still full employment. The schools didn't lay anyone off. So we really didn't take a big hit, but we still tightened our belt. And then we got $5.5 million, which we were happy about, but we kind of wanted to brag that we didn't need it. This year we're getting $17 million. So that sounds like it's a great thing, and it is. But number one, they tell you how you can spend it. So you have to go by their guidelines because it's a grant. And then number two, you'd say, well, pave every road in the city. We want smooth roads. We say, okay, we'll do that. But then in 20 years when they all fail at the same time, are you going to have another $17 million? No. So you have to be strategic. Same with hiring a bunch of police, firemen, street department to plow roads. When the money runs out, how do you pay their salaries? So we're looking at ways that are going to be smart. Number one, we're lacking ADA in a lot of places. City Hall is barely compliant. We might need to put in a wider elevator. There's just a lot of things. We need to get a group of people together to look at all our city facilities and what improvements do we need to make for those people that need it. So that's a good use of the money. There's also Cochran Road can be redeveloped. It's already rezoned. So that's right. There's a greenhouse. It's up almost across from the E-Check up on State Road. So if we improve that road, that's going to bring industry, which pays us back. So we're looking for smart ways to spend money. One of the big ones is public art. I mean, how can you go wrong spending money on public art? So once we get guidance from the feds on what we can use this money on, then we'll have more meetings and more announcements. But $17 million that we didn't really need.
And so you've actually just come from the master plan meeting for the Merriman Valley. Do you want to talk about that a little bit too? Because that's obviously a big part of what's happening. And we're actually having to sort of work in a joint way with Akron, right?
We had to, because it's all fragmented. So the borders down there in the valley are crazy. I mean, whoever drew these things up, yeah, it's just crazy. So if you don't work with another city to redesign all this, you're wasting your time because it's all chopped up. So Akron agreed to share half the cost of this planning group, and we're going to have a lot of public input. So we had our first meeting tonight. It went pretty well on Zoom. And then actually I was coming here, and actually I'm leaving here. We're having a movie in the park. I need to go to Indian Mountain and kick off the nighttime movie for the kids. But that went really well. We're going to have a lot of public meetings, so try and jump in those if you can. They're going to be at Tadaro's after this, and they'll have some refreshments and things down there. So it's something that had to happen. Probably should have happened, 10 years ago maybe, before the development. But if you look at a lot of the national parks around the country, the outskirts are tourist attractions. You have a bed and breakfast or hotels or kayak rentals, bike rentals, because it draws people in. So our whole perimeter of the national park has never been planned very well. And part of the reason is because the two cities are all fragmented. So our zoning couldn't be too restrictive because a guy could just go a quarter mile down the road and buy that property and build whatever he wants. So this way it's gonna all make sense.
Yeah, awesome. I want to give you guys an opportunity to ask some questions. So I'm happy to come out and give the mic if anybody has a question for the mayor. Yeah, come on up, Steve.
Pardon me?
The question was what
motor? It was
a
289 motor? That I had when I blew it up. I built a 68302 and put it in there, so it's all fresh. And a BorgWarner T10 four-speed and a Ford 9-inch rear end with 373s.
A Stephen Mulet.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. I'm curious if you have any information on when the Large Gorge Dam might be coming down is it, what's the responsibility of the city financially and otherwise just to support that effort, and what do you feel about all that?
Yeah, well, thanks. I'm on that committee as well. At one point, the federal EPA was picking up the lion's share of the cost, and the cities would have nothing but some in-kind. And the biggest in-kind was Akron using Cascade Valley. So if you don't know this, behind the dam itself, when the water stops, all the sediment drops out. So there's a big pond, big pool back there filled with sediment. And to haul it away manually, you know the big semis are called coal buckets? So it's a full-size semi. They said it would take not 9,000, 90,000 truckloads of sediment to haul it away. So the plan is to pump it as a slurry all the way down to Cascade Valley, fill socks, dewater it, treat the water at the treatment plant, and then crisscross the socks and build that up as a landfill, because that originally was a landfill at Cascade Valley. That's going to count for a huge in-kind contribution, but now it's not enough. They need another $10 million. So we think that First Energy, we're going to have some big corporate contributors that are going to cover that cost where it can move forward. But a lot of the work's been done, the testing, the boring, the plan, the engineering. So I look for 2 years it'll probably start. And then once the sediment's gone, tearing down the structure is easy. And then you need to do your plantings on the side because it'll be all mud for a while. But it needs to happen.
Awesome. Jennifer Mueller?
You said we're getting $17 million. Like, is there a time limit when that money needs to get spent down? Is it renewable? Things like that.
Yeah, but it has to be spent by 2025. So we do have time, but that comes quickly. You know, in government, you have to plan early for projects. So we want to do things that make sense. We're going to have public input, but we're going to be very limited. In fact, half of it right now we can attribute to COVID-related. So as you can imagine, our natatorium revenue was way down last year because we had to close, and then a lot of people didn't come back right away. So any lost revenue like that, income tax, we can use that money for anything we want. So about half of it we can account for that way. The rest has to be used how they tell you. And the only three things they mention is water, sewer, and broadband at this point.
Chuck, you want to step up?
How you doing, Mr. Mayor? So I know Fairlawn and Hudson are smaller cities and everything, but is there any plans on offering like a citywide fiber internet, kind of city-owned, to bring any businesses in or for the residents?
Yeah, it's very important because that's what we need in the future, right? Smart cities, the traffic lights, there's going to be autonomous cars. Here's the problem, maybe you can help me answer it. So right now, you have a water line, you have a sewer line, you have an electric line because you need them. So you share in the cost of all those lines. So if we're going to put broadband to every house in the city, does everyone pay for it, even if you have no interest? I would say no. If you say, I'm never going to use fiber, I'll just use the 5G or whatever we have. So don't make me pay for running fiber all throughout your whole city. And they have a pretty good argument. So if we say, okay, just the people that are going to use the fiber, we'll count, take a head count, we're going to divide $22 million by just you, you would never pay what it would cost. So the water, sewer, electric, it's necessary, right? But broadband isn't. So we can't split up the fiber amongst every single household here. We have 25,000 homes. There's plenty of people say, oh, no, don't make me pay for that because I'm not using it. So that's the dilemma that we have. With the federal money, it might make it easier. And Summit County is offered to run fiber rings and use Fairlawn as a data center. So that might make it more feasible to where we could run it down a street and then the people would only pay the cost to go just to their home.
Jennifer.
I just think the pandemic has proven that we absolutely need virtual capabilities, upgrades. Asian countries are ahead of us so much. It's a little disappointing to hear people say, oh, we don't need that when it's our future and we've had a pandemic hit us in the face where we all had to be virtual and we all needed broadband and speed. So I really think that it's just as valuable as electricity and water.
Oh, it is for the future. And here's another benefit is I think we're going to get an infrastructure bill out of Congress. So that's going to include a lot of that too. So we're kind of waiting. We don't want to spend all this $17 million on water lines when there's money coming right behind it for that purpose. So, but it'll include broadband because they know how important it is.
Anybody else? Tom?
Okay. So, two terms. It's going to be three. What do you look down the road to see the city infrastructure-wise, because that's what we're talking about now, what do you see as being our biggest challenge going forward in the next 8 years? And because I'm asking that, I'll also ask, what do you feel your biggest accomplishment was over the last 8 years, infrastructure-wise?
Yeah, well, if downtown counts, I would say probably the success of downtown, putting in the road, because all the water, sewer, everything is new in the whole downtown. Moving forward, the challenge that we'll have, I think, is competing with other cities. As you know, Akron redid their downtown. They're going to pump so much money into promoting that that we can never match. So it's always trying to be one step ahead of everyone else. In this business, if you're not developing yourself and you're not doing new things, you're really falling behind because the other cities are. Look at Fairlawn, you mentioned. We're light years behind them. They've got fiber to every house. So we always want to be on the forefront. We want our parks to be the best. We want to be a safe city. We want to make sure you can walk around at night and not have to worry and look over your shoulder. All those things are very important. Our water lines and sewer lines, some are 100 years old. So we already have a plan in place to do those methodically because you want to do it when the road needs paved, right? We don't want to pave a road and then in 2 years tear the whole thing up and put in a water line. Makes no sense. So all these things really have to mesh and coincide. So we're already getting a plan for infrastructure. So a new sewer line in front of your house is not the most glamorous thing, but if it fails, you're going to be glad that it was replaced.
Indeed. Steven.
We live in a, unfortunately, live in a ditch street. Is there any plans in the future to try to update some of those streets? I know there's still some left in the city. I know there's probably more left than we can handle in any given year, but I'm tired of having my car possibly slide into the ditch. I know a lot of people feel the same. And also, a follow-up question to the Gorge Dam again. How do you feel it's going to affect the tourist industry for kayaking? Because it actually could potentially become a destination spot, a national destination spot for people who are into kayaking, because it's class 4 rapids and it's going to be a whole different ball game once that dam comes down.
Right. Well, I'll handle the first one first. The open ditch streets, when those neighborhoods were built, they allowed that. You'll see out in Ward 8, they have a lot of swales and they don't have curbs and gutters out there either. We have an ordinance that covers just what you talked about. So the way the ordinance reads is the city will pay 50%. And each homeowner pays 50% based on their frontage. And the cost is so astronomical that, and the residents get to vote. We don't force it on you. And that means it's pretty much never gonna happen. 60 have to sign just to get an engineer's estimate. So what we do is we're not gonna send our engineer out because you say, well, how much would it cost me? Well, if the people are not in favor, we're not even going to take that step. So once we get that amount of signatures, they'll do an estimate, and it is so expensive. And a lot of these might be rentals, and the landlord doesn't live here. He's not going to vote to do that, improve that street. So unfortunately, we're stuck. The last ones we did was Elmwood, Caleb, and Moulton over by me, and then we did Taylor Street, Underwood, and those were really the last ones. And what could for our half. So we would have to change the ordinance for us to pay for the whole thing. And I'm not saying that, right, 75, 25. I'm not saying that couldn't happen because it's definitely needed. It's dangerous and it deteriorates and it's hard for us to maintain the width of that road because it crumbles. We destroy it with our trash trucks and our snow plows. But there's a process, I'm sorry. And then when the dam comes down. So I've gotten to know the kayakers pretty well. And I'm not one of them. I'm not a professional kayaker.
But you have kayaked down the Cuyahoga.
I've been in a kayak a few times. But so here's what they tell me. Right now we have about a half mile of class 4/5 rapids, which is for the professional. And it starts right behind the Sheridan, continues on, then it levels out. If the Gorge Dam comes down, we'll have 2 miles, and there's nothing east of Colorado that would even mimic that. So they'll be coming in droves. Funny thing, when they did the first kayak race, we had people from, I think, 13 states came here to run that area. They didn't even know about it. So when they said they were coming, I said, hey, I can probably get them to do a good package at the Sheraton where you can have a night stay and maybe breakfast, and then you could do your kayaking. And they took me aside, and they said, we like to camp and drink beer. So I took Riverfront Park, and I went to Park and Rec, and I said, we're going to have a campground this weekend. And so anyhow, we'll accommodate them. But if the dam comes down, we're going to have to be building more hotels and restaurants. Just this week, actually, Tuesday, I got a call back from Rock Climbing Guy. And I emailed them about a month ago, and I said, I want them to come down and take a look at the gorge by the Prospect Bridge, which is probably 80 feet high of sheer sandstone. He's coming out. I'm going to meet with him and see if it's viable, because he told me, he said, well, you would allow us to climb your rocks? And I said, well, why wouldn't I? I said, is it the liability? And there's no liability if we don't charge money as a city. He said, because parks won't let you touch their walls because you hurt the moss and the ferns and all that. And I said, well, we're not really a park. And as long as you don't destroy and leave litter around, you can climb it. So he's going to come. We might have this whole group, because they follow each other like the kayakers, to start do rock climbing in the deepest part behind the Sheraton there.
Wow. I want to just, you know, take a second to thank the lovely folks at the Jenks Building for hosting this event. I don't think they knew how late we wanted to go. I just want to give one more last call for questions. Mike, did you have one?
I know there's talks about the south side of State Road, that being developed and whatnot. Is there anything going on with that? And also, besides the Merriman Valley, you know, Schumacher project, is there anything else planned for Ward 8, like some of those other areas that aren't necessarily part of that plan?
Ward 8's pretty much built out. We're working on the traffic flow up around what we call the Triangle, which is right across from the wine mill. It's pretty bad with CVCA and Walsh in the morning. So we're going to make a bunch of improvements there. It's going to be pretty expensive, but it needs to be done. As far as the rest of Ward 8, it's pretty much built out. There's not a lot of land. And I'll say this real quick, because when I first took office, I thought, well, no, we don't want them to build that there. We don't want them to build that there. But as a property owner, let's say I want to put a shed in my backyard, and it meets the zoning requirements. It's 3 feet from the property line. My neighbors can't stop me. The government can't stop me. It's my property. I can do whatever I want with it. Well, same thing if you own 50 acres. If I want to cut down my oak tree in my front yard, it's mine. I can do it. If I own 50 acres of oak trees, they're mine. So unfortunately, people that own property within our zoning laws can do pretty much whatever they want. So we've seen that build out because there's a high demand. Right now, there's a huge demand for high-end maintenance-free housing. Because if you remember, when we were young, Grandma and Grandpa would get a condo. They don't want to cut grass and shovel snow. Well, that's still true. But now the young professionals don't want to cut grass and shovel snow. So there's a dual demand for high-end maintenance-free living, whether it's owner-occupied or rentals, huge demand. As fast as they build them, they sell them. So that's why they build it. So it's pretty much built out in Ward 8. I don't think you'll see a whole lot more.
I would, Tom?
Well, it's that good. Must be Edison or something. But so they refuse to sell that property. We would love to buy it. It's kind of a gateway as you come out of the north. As of right now, they won't sell it. So we are going to reconfigure some of that. You'll see probably some traffic lights and some changes in the traffic flow. We had a whole study done.
There used to be a traffic light there.
At the northern part right there, yeah. So you'll see some changes there probably happen later on this year. But I wanted to follow up with this one thing, because, again, I learned this when I became mayor. Somehow there's this mystique that you can't call the mayor, visit with the mayor, stop by the mayor's house like Like, I even get that way with Horrigan. I'm like, am I allowed to call him? He's the mayor. The answer is yes. We're normal people. Don't ever let anyone think that they're, like, up here and it's all bullshit. So.
Sorry, Bart.
But I thought that, too, before I became mayor, and I realized just be a normal person. Be approachable. Be just like everybody else. So that's what I do. I pride myself on being normal.
Yeah, and I want to give you an opportunity to say anything else you haven't had a chance to say. We know you're up for re-election, so this is your chance to do your pitch, man.
Well, thanks. And there's a lot of unfinished business. You know, the downtown is still developing, so I'd love to serve another 4 years. It's been the opportunity of a lifetime for me. I mean, whoever had this opportunity in their life? It's very rare, and I take it very serious. So every day I'm excited. Every day I look forward to coming to work and just doing new things. And again, being the cheerleader for Cuyahoga Falls, because that's what we have to do. We need to be better than all the rest. So I love what I do. I'd appreciate the support. Another 4 years, and you'll see what happens. The city gets even better.
And we know you're an avid listener of the Falls Cast. You don't have to answer that. But we want to thank you. But we want to thank you so much for being our esteemed guest on our 50th episode. We really appreciate you. So thanks for coming out. We could do a round of applause now for Mayor Don Walter.
Thank you.
And that's going to conclude our 50th episode extravaganza. Thank you, everybody, for participating, for your help, for the Jenks Building for hosting us. And, time to tear it down. See you guys later.